breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where one thing has become more clear after the president's town hall at ABC last night. And that is that President Trump is treating this as a base election. He is absolutely committed to mobilizing his base, making sure that everybody who thinks that he is doing a great job making America great again will come out and vote for it. Is that, in fact, a winning strategy? We will talk about that with Gerald Seib of The Wall Street Journal, who's looking at the state of the campaign as we now approach less than 2 weeks before that fateful first debate. What did the president's session with George Stephanopoulos of ABC TV last night show about the way he has to approach the first debate with Joe Biden? And what about this habit of retweeting scurrilous and misleading and defamatory stuff about his opponent? Is that a good idea? Is that just fighting as hard as you know how to fight? Or does that cross some kinds of lines? We will get to that on the Michael Medved Show. We'll also be speaking with Brett Stevens of the New York Times, who has been one of those people, not a Trump supporter, who was hailed what the president achieved yesterday with the agreements between Israel and the United Arab Emirates on the one hand and Bahrain on the other. And Brett Stevens talking about why it is that President Trump was able to succeed with that where many of his predecessors have not been able to make that sort of progress. We'll also be speaking with Ilan Berman, who has a very, very strong basis for supporting the idea that, hey, we just had the 19th anniversary of 9/11. Don't think that Al-Qaeda has disappeared. It hasn't, nor has ISIS, nor has the threat of Islamo-Nazi terror. So what do we need to do about it? We'll be speaking with Ilan Berman coming up. And why did a university band have to disband? We will cover that story, which has something to do with cancel culture and much more, coming up on the Michael Medved Show. But first, I wanted to highlight what it just seems to me is incredibly good news in a deeply divided country. And particularly after watching the president last night in what some of his supporters have called an ambush, he got very tough questions. He got tough questions from ABC, and he got tough questions from the audience in Pennsylvania. There's also new polling that's very contradictory. We will get to that. But this one poll, which is a major poll conducted by the National Opinion Research Center at University of Chicago, and it's basically a poll for the Harvard University Carr Center for Human Rights. The headline really is that we're not so divided when you ask America about our basic rights and the purpose of government and what we need for the future. The headline over at Politico, where they've had an advanced look at this major poll, says Americans united on a slew of issues despite contentious election season. More than 7 in 10 believe that we have more in common with one another than many think, shows the poll. As the U.S. heads into the final 50-day sprint of a 2020 campaign in which political polarization has hit fever pitch, this new polling today reveals numerous points of bipartisan consensus among the American public on the rights and values key to the country's national identity. Moreover, the survey conducted for Harvard University's Carr Center for Human Rights and obtained by Politico ahead of its release found that more than 7 of 10 Americans believe they have more in common with one another than many people think. The John Shattuck, who is director of the poll and of a general project at Carr Center on reimagining rights and responsibilities in the United States. He says, overall, I think Americans want not to be divided as politics is forcing this country to be. And that's probably the biggest message of the poll. Division is not what most Americans are seeking, he added. The findings, including that 8 in 10 Americans agree that, quote, without our freedoms, American is nothing. 8 in 10 people agree with that. Could be telling in an election that features President Donald Trump and Joe Biden, the Democratic presidential nominee, battling each other to claim the mantle of uniter-in-chief. And that, by the way, is one of those areas in the battle where the polling has been completely consistent. People see Joe Biden, with all his faults, as more of a uniter than Donald Trump. Can that change in time for the debates? Did that change at all last night? We will get to that. The fascinating thing is that they asked people, do you believe that Americans have a right to clean air and water? That was considered important or very important by 93%. Protection of your personal data, that was considered very important by 93%. The right to a quality education, 92%. Racial equality, 92%. Affordable health care by 89%. And the right to a job by 85%. By the way, please note, when you're asking people, do you have a right to affordable health care? That doesn't mean you get it free. It means that it ought to be affordable. And that's kind of a gimme question. Of course, everybody thinks you should have a right to affordable health care. Is that a right that is denied many people right now? The idea that people cannot get health care in emergencies when they need it because of their financial situation, we do have arrangements for that. We've had a vast expansion of government-funded health care. But do we need to do better on that? And does the president need to be careful about this ongoing attempt that the Justice Department is involved with to basically eliminate Obamacare when there's no replacement ready? Yeah, I think that's a real problem. Even issues like immigration, where 66% felt that people have a right to immigrate to this country, and protecting a woman's right to choose and make decisions affecting her own personal life, 72% thought that was an important right. That was typically viewed as highly divisive. It is. It garnered bipartisan support generally. In other words, a majority of all parties, though with more of a partisan divide. The survey found its biggest gap on the issue of race and policing. Although more than 6 in 10 agreed that Black Americans and other racial minorities are targets of racism and policing, that total included 84% of Democrats compared with just 32% of Republicans. And by the way, the idea that racial minorities are targets of racism and policing, that the police go after people just because of their race, I don't think that's true. I am with that majority of Republicans who would not agree with that statement. In what could be another telling sign ahead of the November election, the pollsters report, overwhelming bipartisan majorities of Americans reported a shift in how they view the role and responsibility of government in protecting rights and the responsibility of citizens to follow to other fellow citizens following the events of the past several months. So how have things changed? We will get to that. We will also get to a situation where fellow citizens are not getting along, and a guy who was basically assaulted by neighbors for waving an American flag and a Trump sign is now arrested. Why is the homeowner arrested? We'll get to that story out of Wisconsin coming up on the MedVed Show.
fun here.
This is the Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, there is this story out of Milwaukee. It's just breaking now, and we will cover it when we get more details and we can actually get some of the sound. But it appears that there's an individual in a neighborhood in Milwaukee whose neighbors staged a protest against him because they considered him racist. The initial reports were that he was considered racist because he had an American flag in front of his house and a sign that said, "Get on board the Trump train." Now, that's outrageous. And they staged a demonstration. They apparently went onto his property. He had a gun, legally owned. He went outside with a gun. He didn't shoot anything. He was arrested. And that sounds problematic. The entire thing sounds problematic and sounds outrageous. One of the latest reports suggests that the reason people thought he was racist was because he not only had the Trump sign, he had a Confederate flag. Okay, if he had a Confederate flag, that doesn't give people the right. It shouldn't give people the right to stage a demonstration and to call him all sorts of names. Apparently, they had a party atmosphere out in front of his house. But again, this is one of those stories that is just getting more and more detail. The guy's name is Pete. I don't know what he's being charged with. We will bring you up to date when more information is available. In terms of this poll, which is fascinating, it's going to be released in detail, and I think it's worth getting used to, because anything that suggests what I believe, and it's not simply believe, it's something that I know. Americans are divided over politics, but when it comes to our basic attitudes toward the country, I don't think we're that divided. I think the percentage of people who think America is a guilty, criminal, failed state that is entirely based on slavery and racism, I think that's a small number of people. I think it's a small number of people in every community, yes, including the Black community, certainly including the Latino community, which both candidates, by the way, have been putting some emphasis on. But I think this was very telling. A bipartisan majority of Americans reported a shift in how they view the role and responsibility of government in protecting rights and the responsibility of citizens to fellow citizens following the events of the past several months, including the coronavirus pandemic, the ensuing economic fallout, and the mass protests for racial justice. The poll found that recent events had made 85% of Americans think differently about the role and responsibility of government. Now, that does not mean that they have a great attitude toward government, or that they feel that government has to do more and more and more and more. The survey, reports Politico, reveals a resounding cynicism toward government, with more than two-thirds, 69%, agreeing, quote, "I feel like the government doesn't represent the America that I love." And this is something that unites Republicans, Democrats, everybody. It's not just a reflection of a rejection of Trump, because obviously there are big parts of the government, like the House of Representatives, that are run by the Democrats. A 53% majority said events of the past few months had caused them to have less respect for the government. That includes 64% of Democrats and 41% of Republicans, 52% of independents. And that's a large, large number. The conclusion of all of this is the poll shows a majority of Americans are fed up with polarization, and they are looking for ways to reimagine the values they have in common, the rights and responsibilities of being an American today. The poll was conducted, by the way, at the very end of July. So given how quickly things change, who knows what that poll would say now? Speaking of things changing, The town hall last night, which was kind of strange because it was George Stephanopoulos and Donald Trump sitting a good distance from one another on a stage, and it was an almost empty arena around them, lots and lots of empty seats, almost everybody wearing a mask, not the two principals, of course, who were there. But they had questions that they had selected in advance for the president, and they tried to mix the questions up from people who said that last time they had voted for Hillary, last time they had voted for President Trump, last time they had voted for a third-party candidate. And one of the best questions, it seems to me, came from a guy named Jim Rowdeski. He is from Irwin, Pennsylvania. And he said he voted for Donald Trump in 2016. Here's the question that he posed to the President of the United States.
Times, some have called your behavior not presidential. What, if anything, would you do differently if reelected to create a more unified message where all sides can take responsibilities for their actions and come together to make positive change?
Good, Jim. So I'm fighting a battle. It's a big battlefield, and I have a lot of forces against me. I have the media, which I call the fake news, because a lot of it is fake. And I mean a big pope, as you understand. A lot of it is fake. I'm fighting a lot of forces. Sometimes you don't have time to be totally, as you would say, presidential. You have to get things done. I think I've done more than any other president in the first 3.5 years. When you look at what we've done for tax cuts and regulation cuts and the vets, all of the things that we've done for the West, we have a 91% approval factor now for the vets. So we rebuilt our military. We created Space Force. I mean, we did so many things. Right to Try, which is so incredible and so successful. You know what Right to Try is? We did more, I really believe it, more than any other president in the first 3.5 years. By the way, at the end of my first term, we're going to have close to 300, maybe over 300 new federal judges, including Court of Appeal, two Supreme Court justices.
Okay, the president then went on. And remember, the question here was, what would he do in his second term to try to be more unifying? Here's the president. We will get to the point here, it seems to me, is that what we have is a poll that shows overwhelmingly that Americans are actually not so divided on issues. They're very divided on personalities. Half the country is scared to death of Biden. Half the country is scared to death of Trump. So where do we go from there? And when the president is asked a question like that, what will you do differently in the second term to be a more unifying president? What could or should he say? We will get to that and more on the Medved Show. As we await the debates, we'll also be talking about the president's undoubted achievement with the Middle East peace deals and more coming up.
Michael Medved
is a high-quality human being.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. And last night, the president got a question from a high-quality human being who said he was a Trump voter and somebody who had supported the president last time, named Jim Rowdeski. And here's exactly the question that he asked the president. It's in the transcript of the debate. It's an important question, and it seems to me it's a fair question. Some of the questions from toward President Trump were very clearly hostile. This one was not. He said, at times, some have called your behavior not presidential. What, if anything, would you do differently if reelected to create a more unified message where all sides can take responsibilities for their actions and come together to make positive change? And the president began by saying, I'm fighting a lot of forces, talking about fighting against fake news, and talking about all the things he got done. And then he goes on to say he could have been presidential, and he says, like Abe Lincoln where he's wearing the top hat, the high hat, he says. Here's the president, clip 1B.
I could be so present. I always used to sort of kid on the campaign trail that I could be more presidential. It would be very easy, more presidential than any other candidate except for possibly Abraham Lincoln when he's wearing the hat, right, the high hat. But the fact is, being presidential is easier than what I have to do. But I get things done. I get things done like nobody's ever gotten. When you look at, including environmental things, when you look at what's going on in the country and all that we've done, we unfortunately got hit by this plague, but it's going to be back very soon. We opened it up, and we have, you know, you talk, Jim, about the V. We have a super V. It looks like it's going to be a super V. We're going to have a great economy next year, and I think we're going to have a great economy in the third quarter. And thank you for voting me for in 2016. I hope you're going to do it again.
Thanks, sir.
Okay. What's interesting here is that the idea that being presidential interferes with getting things done is simply wrong. And it's a crucial mistake. It's a mistake historically. It's a mistake in terms of the approach of the president. Presidents who get things done by white people, and a few people over on the Democratic side, then you can, in fact, get things done. And the one obvious thing, what is it when people talk about President Trump not being presidential? What is the number one word that comes to mind? It's tweets. And he's in under new fire about tweets that he sends out, retweeting. He retweeted a couple of tweets that are deeply, deeply insulting to Joe Biden, one of which is a manipulated tape that makes it look like Joe Biden was identifying with the song F the Police, which he wasn't. And the other tweet using the hashtag pedo Joe, meaning pedophile, and it's associated with QAnon. And this, in fact, was a big question that was posed yesterday on cable news. The point over here is the president began his answer by saying, I don't have time to be presidential. Well, if you don't have time, maybe if you spend a little bit less time on Twitter, honestly, it might help him. And seriously, what do you think the reaction would be if he said, yeah, in the second term, I think I'm going to devote a little bit less time to my 86 million Twitter followers? Do you think that that would get a terrible reaction? A little bit less time? It seems to me that that's not unreasonable. President Trump was then involved in talking about the civil unrest and the riots around the country. And he made a point about where that is happening. Clip 2A.
You take a look. This is a Democrat problem, George. I know you're a Democrat, but this is largely a Democrat problem. If you just take a look at the list, every Democrat city, almost, not all, but a lot of them, certainly in the top 25, even if you go to the top 50, almost every city is run by the Democrats. People don't respect our police, and they have to respect
them. You promised 4 years ago at the Republican convention, I'm going to restore law and order.
And I have, except in Democrat-run cities. Look, we have laws. We have to go by the laws. We can't move in the National Guard. I can call insurrection, but there's no reason to ever do that, even in a Portland case. We can't call in the National Guard unless we're requested by a governor. If a governor or a mayor is a Democrat, and then like in Portland, we call them constantly. I just spoke to the governor yesterday because we're giving them relief on the fires. We're giving them an emergency declaration. I said, Governor, let us go in and we'll clean up Portland so fast in a half an hour.
Okay. And then he goes on, and Stephanopoulos actually makes a, it seems to me, a good and relevant point. This would be the clip 2B.
what they want is a bailout of Democrat-run states that are doing poorly. And, you know, I don't think this is the right
way to go.
Why
do you keep talking about Democrat states and Democrat states? They're American states and American states.
Democrat-run states are the ones that are doing badly, George. If you look at New York, if you look at Illinois, if you look at a lot of different places, they're doing poorly. And cities, in particular, cities. I mean, these cities are being run so poorly.
But don't you have a responsibility for those states and cities as well?
But largely because of the crime. They don't want to do anything about crime. Sanctuary cities, they have sanctuary cities where they're protecting criminals. They have things that the Republicans don't have. So they are. I mean, I don't want to say, look, I'm the president of everybody, but I don't want to say it, but they're Democrat-run cities.
Okay, they are American cities, and clearly there needs to be improvement there. And to basically... I do think that this is going to be a vulnerability at the debates. If the president doesn't have a better answer for how to work with Democrat-run cities, one of the things he could have said was, look, I have no problem working with Democrats when they're willing to work with me. And to talk about the kind words he received from Governor Gavin Newsom of California, kind words he received from Andrew Cuomo when they were working together on the virus. And honestly, that is reassuring to Americans. And it's what everybody wants. The idea that America is so profoundly divided, and by the way, this whole idea of the Democrat-run cities and their problems, there is no question that that is a problem. We don't even have a Democratic government in Seattle. It's a socialist government, basically, where the Democratic mayor is overwhelmed by radicals way to her left. Now, these are very real problems, and good for the president for pointing them out. But the idea is you are president of all the people. And to divide America when people are asking for bailouts from Democrat-run cities, to divide America on that basis, the whole country needs a bailout. And don't we all wish that the Republicans and Democrats could get together, maybe, just maybe, to provide one? It's fascinating to me. I don't know if it was by design, but the president yesterday celebrated one of the truly notable foreign policy triumphs of any president, in the last 20 years. It was a big deal, or as Joe Biden once said, a big blank deal. And the idea that that did not receive attention at the town hall last night, that's not fair. But in fact, it's not fair that NBC, another one of the networks, wants to downplay the president's achievement. We will get to that and much more coming up on The Medved Show.
What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
The Michael Medved Show.
In these tough economic times, if you or your family own a coin collection, then... On the Michael Medved Show, there were moments in the president's town hall where he actually did show some warm and compassionate responsiveness to some of the people who questioned him. This is band 4, Jeremy, 4A. And one of the questions was a sensitive question. From an emotional questioner, and she was emotional because of circumstances in her own family. Her name was Flor Crucita. Listen.
What would you do for our immigration system? What would you change to make more people like me and like her to become citizen and vote?
So we are doing something with immigration that I think is going to be very strong, because we want people to come into our country, people like you and like your mother. And that just shows how vicious the COVID is, especially when you have another problem. You have a heart problem or another type of a problem. And it's a very sad story. But we want people to come into our country. We want them to come in, a lot of people, but we want them to come in through a legal system, through a system that they love our country. They work to come into our country, a merit system. And we're working on something very hard right now, and in a very short time, we're going to be announcing it. And I think it's going to have quite an impact. I think it's going to be something that actually will be popular for all. I mean, as far as your situation with your mother, that is just devastating, because I can imagine how you feel. And sounds like a great woman. And I'll tell you, I'm pretty good with people. She gave us a great daughter, a great child. What she's done with you, the way you are, the love that you have for your mother, I can see that. It's hard. And so many people, and they die alone. They die alone because this is such a vicious thing. You can't go there and hold their hand. You can't give them a kiss goodnight. It's a terrible, terrible thing. And hopefully the vaccines are going to be very soon.
Okay. What the president, I don't think, picked up there is the implication was both the lady and her mother wanted to have a chance to become citizens, which kind of implies they may not have permanent residency status. And that is one of the problems right here. It's the problem with the TPS announcement that was made in court yesterday, where there is now talk of deporting 400,000 people who've lived in this country for more than 30 years, most of them. It's a crazy situation, and I do hope the president comes up with something. And if it is something that's going to be so popular and so reasonable and address what is a national disgrace, which is our immigration system, then why not move forward with it as quickly as possible? The last question of the evening, this is clip 5, was from a town hall attendee who asked something, I think, which is a thought-provoking, serious, important question, asking what was the most challenging part of the presidency so far for Donald Trump. Listen.
My question is, what has been the most difficult part of your presidency, and what have you learned from it?
So I think without question, I would say, because things were going so well, I think I'd have to say the whole COVID, the China virus, as I call it, because it comes from China. I think it's a much more accurate term. It's been very difficult. It's been so sad. As an example, talking to you about your mother, it's just such a sad situation. We're getting there. We will get there. We're going to. It's going to happen. But it's been a very difficult. Nobody's seen anything like this probably since 1917.
What did you learn from it?
I learned that life is very fragile. I knew people that were powerful people, strong people, good people, and they got knocked out by this and died. 6 people. It was 5 until about 2 weeks ago. Now it's 6. But I've learned that life is very fragile, because these were strong people, and all of a sudden they were dead. They were gone. And it wasn't their fault. It was the fault of a country that could have stopped it. And I made a great trade deal with China.
Any of
it was
your fault?
I feel so differently about that deal now. It's a great deal. It was good for the farmers, good for the manufacturers. But I don't view it the same way. It was good for us, but I don't view it the same way because of the horror of this disease that really could have been stopped at the border.
Okay, that was President Trump. And then George Stephanopoulos asking that key question, could he have done more? This is 5B.
Could you have done more to stop it?
I don't think so. I think what I did by closing up the country, I think I saved 2, maybe 2.5, maybe more than that lives. I really don't think so. I think we did a very good job. I don't know if that's been recognized. We've made a lot of governors feel good. We've made some reputationally. We've enhanced their reputation. They didn't have anything. We got them the supplies. We got them the ventilators. We've made a lot of people look good that shouldn't look good, to be honest with you.
That's the president of the United States. Coming up, look, this is one of those things. Why did the president do this? I think the president who said he didn't want to do any formal debate prep, I think the president was doing this as formal debate prep. And I think he is sitting down with his staff, I hope so, and figuring out more effective ways that he could have answered some of those questions. The reason I say that is, look, I don't think there's any question the president is going to connect with his base. And for people who are already planning to vote for President Trump, and that's easily 40% or more of the American public, he got 46% of the vote last time. And it may be that many this time, but that's not going to be enough. And what the president needs to do, and Jason Riley makes this point in a piece in the Wall Street Journal today, is talk about expanding the base. In terms of expanding your horizons, I've gotten a lot of response because we had my brother Jonathan on earlier this week and because of the new and very exciting peace deal. If you want to sign up for free, it costs you nothing. There is no obligation. No one is going to hassle you. It just gives you information. If you wish you were in early on some of the best performing IPOs, initial public offerings, of the last 2 years, well, people who invested in our crowd were. Our crowd, you can have investors have the ability to invest directly, easily, and very early. There's no obligation to get information about some of the companies that are being launched and that you can be part of. You can get that information for free. Just go to our website, go to the banner for Our Crowd, and Our Crowd companies have been bought or are being bought by the likes of Nike, Microsoft, Oracle, and Intel. Click on the banner at michaelmedved.com and mention Michael Medved when you sign up. That won't guarantee you special treatment, but it can't hurt. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the Our Crowd banner. We got an email that just came in from Preston, Washington. And it's from Gary. Gary says, I disagree 100% regarding your position on the vaccine. This is particularly well documented regarding the flu vaccine. People take the vaccine and still get the flu. Absolutely. We find out the vaccine is for the wrong type of flu. Medical professionals, he says, unless they are required by their hospital, reject the vaccine. This is a pure moneymaker for big pharma and a scare tactic to generate sales. We should be cautious regarding any medical recommendations. P.S. I understand Dr. Fauci will receive a $500,000 payout if his vaccine is accepted. This sounds like the foxes in the hen house. Count me out. I am on the side of the senatorial candidate who suggests caution. Look, I don't think they are going to approve a vaccine from the FDA and from the federal government and unless it has shown in trials that it is effective in most cases, or many cases, with no side effects. And this, by the way, you're right, by the way, this flu vaccine does not prevent flu in every case. It just reduces your chances of getting it. And wouldn't that be wonderful? It's the same thing. Masks don't protect you 100% of the time. They just reduce your chances of getting the virus. And why should it be wrong to encourage people to participate in something that makes them safer while giving them all of the facts and all of the background? We're going to be speaking with Brett Stevens, who is a former editor of the Jerusalem Post, about the epic-making significance of what happened yesterday and why it is that some people in the left-wing press are downplaying it for this greatest nation on God's green earth.